We are talking with Greg Pallas, who is author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and also he's going to be speaking this coming Monday, 7 p.m., Town Hall. Greg, U.S. electoral fraud has been a big focus of some of your work, and you were the first reporter to bring to light the massive purging of voter lists in Florida that our mainstream press here in the U.S. still doesn't seem to report. Can you remind our listeners how many people were purged from the lists in Florida and update us on how many of those people have been put back on those lists since then?
Okay, just to clue in those, in case you've been watching American mainstream media, which means that you are now ignorant and in the dark, 5 months before the election of 2000, Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris ordered the removal of, now we know it's 94,000 people from the voter rolls. They called them felons, evildoers. In fact, these people were innocent of every crime except voting while black. So most of the people on the list were blacks and Hispanics, who are solid Democratic voters, who just happened to share a name with someone who got caught with a crime at some point. But these people were innocent. So that's how your president was elected. And the NAACP sued after the election. They didn't change the guy in the White House. But First Brother Jeb did agree to put people back on the voter rolls. And as far as I could tell, hardly anyone's back on the voter rolls. I mean, I just was down there speaking to Willie Steen, who is one of these so-called felons. The guy, unlike our president, served 4 years honorably in the military and worked at a hospital. He's never had a record in his life, but he has a name that's close to someone who committed a crime in Ohio. So he still can't register to vote. I mean, it is amazing. And that's why I've actually written a new edition of my book to update the evils that not only befell us in 2000, but how they're going to fix 2004.
And by fix, you don't mean, like, repair.
Well, it depends. If your brother Jeb, you're repairing the defenses. As Henry Kissinger once said, the issues are too important to be decided by the voters. And, the Bush family has taken that to heart. You know, so I think that their mood is that, you know, certain things like who should be president, they're just too important to be left to voters, especially, you know, black ones in Florida. So, number one, they're not letting those people back on the voter rolls. They've come up with new excuses. I mean, even though they admit, like in this case, this guy, Willie Steen, they actually said, we know this guy is perfectly innocent of any crime and we'll get around to getting him back on, certainly after the election. But what we're seeing is that they're taking the Florida game and putting it on the road in, as the new edition of the book explains, and I'll explain actually at Seattle and your fair city on Monday night, is that our president has signed a law called Help Americans Vote Act. And as soon as, you know, our president tells us he's going to help us vote, I get real nervous. And one of the things it requires is that every state begin some type of purge of its voter rolls under the direction of the Secretary of State. Now, Washington, you probably have less to fear than places like Georgia and Tennessee and Illinois. But believe me, in some states, that's just a license for electoral kill.
I saw an article in yesterday's Independent that they were talking about a report that came out by the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights that said the Help America Vote Act wasn't cutting it so far. That
Well, it depends what you see. Again, you have to remember, what is your goal? If your goal is to prevent black people from voting who vote Democratic, I mean, you have to understand, the Bushes are not prejudiced. That's why we have Colin Powell, Condi Rice. They have no problem with rich Republican black people. It's not the color of people's skins that concern the Bushes. It's the color of their vote. And so the Help America Vote Act also had some provisions to help register minority people. And needless to say, none of that stuff has gone into effect. Rather, what we've had is the kind of, you know, search and destroy mission against black voters nationwide. I mean, it is real serious stuff. I was working a campaign with Martin Luther King III to try to put a halt to this. And then, of course, the new gimmick with this is that Help America Vote Act provides billions to push computerization of voting, which, and let me tell you, man, as soon as you gatesify that our voting system, it'll be about as reliable as Windows.
Talk about the company that had a hand in purging the voter rolls there in Florida. I think it was Choice Point. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a company. I think it's valuable for everyone to know who elected our president. It's a company called Choice Point of Atlanta. They're the people that came up with this bogus list of felon voters who weren't felons, mainly just black people. Now, once I exposed the, I should say, my team at BBC Television and I write for The Guardian of Britain, and my Guardian team exposed Choice Point's little game, they pulled out of the voter purge business, and they immediately moved over to the war on terror. And they are one of the big contractors with no-bid, cushy contracts to supply information on Americans. You know, like September 11th, 2001, we Americans were victims of a terrorist attack. By September 12th, we all became the suspects. And now this company, Choice Point, is keeping over 16 billion records on Americans living, dead, and yet to be born, which are now available to the FBI and our Fatherland Security Department. And they've also been messing around in the rest of the world. Not, you know, the hijackers came from Saudi Arabia and from the Arabian Peninsula, but we've been hiring this company to start going through the voter lists of Venezuela, Brazil, and Argentina, where, by the way, happen to be headed by people that Mr. Bush does not particularly love. So it looks like they're being hired basically to do a Florida on other nations.
So who's purging the voter lists now in the United States if Checkpoint's out of there, or Choice Point?
Yeah, well, one of the crew that's got the big contracts is Accenture, which used to be called Arthur Anderson Consulting. These were the guys that cooked the books for Enron and other power companies. I mean, we've got guys who are very good at manipulating records, and now they're in charge of manipulating the records. You know, the games don't stop. Why we are purging voters from voter rolls, our president, Mr. Bush, immediately pointed a blue ribbon panel after he was selected by the Supreme Court to make sure that no disasters would occur again. And he pointed Jerry Ford and Jimmy Carter, so you know that he wasn't serious. But they said, why are we purging voters? This is, you know, in the United States of America, we believe in citizenship. We don't start getting rid of citizens. We don't have, like, the Soviet Union non-citizen status. So, you know, that's just one of the games. The other thing is that we have a new system of, that's in the new edition of the book, 1 million black people cast votes in the 2000 election, which were never counted nationwide. I mean, it's such a stunning figure. I got this, by the way, I didn't come up with this. This was actually, I simply got the figures from Harvard University Law School working with the Civil Rights Commission, statistics that were buried in the official government reports. But, you know, people think you vote and your vote counts. You vote and maybe someone will count that vote. But there's all kinds of games played to technically disqualify votes. And as it turns out, of the 2 million votes disqualified in 2000, half of them were cast by black people. I mean, that wasn't a close election, you have to understand. You know, if you go by people who cast ballots or would have cast ballots if they hadn't been wrongly barred from the polls, it wasn't close at all.
Was there specific states that stood out, like, obviously you mentioned Florida that purged 94,000, that stood out from that 1 million that were pulled from the...
Yeah, Georgia and Florida. Illinois, by the way, and what makes Georgia and Illinois interesting is that the Democratic Party gave a wink and a nod to this little game. Don't forget, all politics is local. They don't care. Politicians really don't care at the state level who's elected president. It means nothing to them. In the case of Georgia, Democrats were very concerned that high black votes would eliminate a lot of the white nominees of the party, like Zell Miller. And, you know, wiping out the black vote was key to, for example, eliminating renegades like Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. The Democratic Party is much more concerned about flushing out troublemakers and renegades who are supported by black voters than they are with building the biggest national total. I mean, I spoke with Terry McAuliffe, the chairman of the Democratic Party, and while he was, you know, I can't say he was unconcerned about the loss of all these black votes, but, you know, it was number 92 on his agenda. He says, we don't have money for that. Instead, they have money for soirees with John Kerry.
So what you reported that happened in Florida, we can pretty much expect to come to our states across the U.S. here.
Yeah, again, Washington, see, you can get lulled into thinking you've got a democracy if you live in the borderlands like Washington and Oregon. But when you're in Georgia, you know, democracy is kind of a, you know, if they feel like it. The 1965 Voting Rights Act gave black people the right to vote, but never gave them the right to have their vote counted. That's when it started out, when it was the resistance of segregated areas to give the vote to black people. So once they had the vote, just throw their ballots out. And I saw this in Florida. Gadsden County, if you made a mistake on a paper ballot, it's the blackest county in Florida, 57% black population. You made a wrong mark on your ballot, and your ballot was tossed out as technically unreadable. In the neighboring white county, Tallahassee, where Brother Jeb is, if you made a wrong mark on your ballot, you were given a new ballot. And therefore, there's virtually no spoilage, that is, almost no ballot thrown out in white Tallahassee, but 1 in 8 votes was simply tossed out in the black counties in Florida. The Civil Rights Commission investigated this. I brought this to their attention. They investigated it, and they said, that's right, it was worse than I had actually reported on DBC. They said one altogether throughout Florida, 1 in 7 black votes was never counted. Never counted. It wasn't close in Florida. And that got buried in, I think it's Appendix 14 of their official report. You know, but since it's Appendix 14, I thought I'd bring it to your attention in Seattle.
With the exception of your book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the new edition, your website, gregpalace.com, and occasionally on the BBC and The Guardian, there's nowhere else we can find this info, even though it
Well, I mean,
in the US.
You know, we're trying to break through the electronic Berlin Wall. I mean, you know, I have to lob my reports in from Britain. We've got Mike McCormick letting me sneak through, and got Al Franken and Janine Garofalo, who have their own little shows, who are helping through. In fact, by the way, I have an audio version of my book. If those of you who've gone to American public schools and have difficulty reading, there is Alan Janine and Jim Hightower have read my book to CDs. You can get those. Yeah, I mean, and of course, Michael Moore is making a film based on a lot of my research. His next film coming out, Fahrenheit 9/11. So, you know, that's how we kind of sneak it through. I mean, Moore's good because, you know, whenever I can't get my stuff on the air in the U.S., on mainstream, I just, you know, give it to the fat guy in the chicken suit and he sneaks it in as comedy.
Yeah, I can imagine having those guys reading that. It's kind of like a modern adult version of Grimm's Fairy Tales.
Yeah, it's like, well, you know, the interesting thing is I just got a note from Fox TV, one of their biggest local channel, and they're kind of sneaking me in literally on a cooking program. They say, we love your stuff, but we can't tell the network. So, you know, we're getting there. So we have our little Samizdat meetings. You know, look, nothing in America has ever been done with the approval of them that own us. So that's why we have our little meetings and gatherings. And, you know, until Patriot Act 4 goes into effect, you can still read books. That's why. So one of the reasons I've done a new edition is that this stuff couldn't wait till after the election. And I despair. I've been running these reports on BBC television. But, you know, I despair of getting it to the public unless I put it in some type of written form that they literally can't block.
Let's talk about some issues that will be coming up in this year's election. One of those, obviously, is the war in Iraq that is turning from bad to worse.
Depends on whose idea of worse. But, yeah, go ahead.
It would seem if, you know, you're in the Bush administration that's going from bad to worse, at least in terms of the public outcry, which is starting to pick up now.
Well, actually, in the new edition of the book, I have something that you have to see, which is I got from inside the U.S. State Department a document, a plan. It's called the Iraq Strategy, pieces of it. It indicates exactly how the U.S. government was planning well before the attack of September 11th, well before the invasion, to carve up the assets of Iraq, including, and this is a quote from the document, including and especially the oil industry. And so the oil was always on the program, and it's still on the program. So it may be, you know, when you say it's going badly for kids who are sitting targets of maniacs there. I'm not sure it's going badly for the oil companies who right now, oil prices are nice and high, record earnings that we haven't seen since the 73 oil embargo. I mean, this is a very good war for Exxon, very good war for Shell, very good war for Mr. Cheney's friends. And, you know, it just isn't very good for the kids who were sent there.
Or the Iraqis, or...
Or, you know, from the Iraq... That's the other thing. So I just had an interview. I just spoke, had an exclusive interview with Jay Garner for BBC Television. And basically, the story that came out is, you know, this was, in case you're wondering who Jay Garner is, he was the guy who was our kind of first viceroy for Iraq. And if you remember, he was suddenly, like, disappeared, like Stalinized, you know, like the White House kept saying he was incompetent, and they removed him, and they put in this guy, this brilliant guy, Paul Bremer III. Well, Garner basically was pulled because he called for elections. He said, it's their nation, it's their oil, he wanted elections within 90 days, he called for a big meeting of the 400 secular, religious, and tribal leaders of the nation to set the elections date and give them their country. And now, this is what the United Nations is proposing and Bush is reluctantly agreeing to, which is to let Iraqis have Iraq. You know, they've done this wonderful bait and switch with us, this stuff called sovereignty. I mean, can our president even spell sovereignty? I'd like to run a pop quiz by him. Originally, they talked about democracy, and when I went to school, democracy meant elections and votes and tallying the vote. But now we don't have, we're not talking about democracy in Iraq. We're talking about something called sovereignty. We pick a puppet government, criminals like, convicted swindlers like this guy Chalabi that we are putting in charge. So we set up this puppet government, and then we say we're giving the puppet government sovereignty and power. Well, since when is that turning over, bringing democracy to the Mideast?
Does it seem odd to you that the evidence now shows, and like you're talking about the documents you've dug up, that clearly they've been planning Iraq, the invasion of Iraq, for a long time? It seems like the one thing this administration has been like focusing on is Iraq, and yet the war is going so badly for them. The cutting and dividing seems to be going well, but doesn't it seem like they should have had the whole war and the spin on it a little bit more under control by now?
Well, I mean, look, they were warned. I have to tell you that just last night I spoke to one of the people who was involved in planning the post-war Iraq, and by the way, the committee he was on began within days of Bush taking office in 2001. This has nothing to do with September 11th or going after bad guys or weapons of mass destruction. This plan, he was literally on the committee. He's an Iraqi-born oil economist who was on the committees, and you should know that they were warned that unless you give, you know, if you got rid of Saddam, that actually the people of Iraq would be grateful, while they were quite certain of that. But they said if you stay there and you don't let Iraqis control Iraq, you are asking for major trouble, especially because they have now destroyed the economy of that nation. I mean, Bush's guys came in. One thing, when you start taking away a nation's assets, you also destroy their economy. And you have one-third unemployment. And there's an unfortunate side to it. Most of the people who are unemployed also have guns because we disbanded their army. You know, but we didn't take away their weapons. We simply took away their livelihood and their ability to feed their families. There are 15 million people without money to buy food in Iraq. 15 million people who are completely busted and are starving. And it doesn't take very much to get those people who are armed to the teeth a little bit angry.
Makes your average person into a guerrilla fighter as compared to what the administration is trying to spin.
It didn't have to start out that way if we'd let Iraqis have Iraq. But you couldn't have this plan for taking off all their assets. You know, this guy Paul Bremer, he's now signed off a flat tax like Bush is trying to put in here. He signed off on a free trade zone, no trade barriers, which is destroying local Iraqi industry. He's, you know, put in this whole right-wing lobbyist fantasy. And I got to tell you that there are lobbyists involved, corporate lobbyists involved in these carve-up plans. You know, I mean, it wasn't just the right-wing fruitcakes like Wolfowitz. And Iraqis are paying the price for this. You know, plus, we got Wolfowitz saying that they're going to have to now pay us back for the cost of the invasion. And I got to tell you, we're not going to get that out of them unless we're willing to get it out of them at gunpoint. In fact, I do have to tell you that the insiders told me that when oil revenue projections were made, Wolfowitz was told that there is no conceivable way to pay for the occupation of Iraq out of oil revenues. It can't happen. There is no calculation, high, lower, medium, which will give you the money to cover the occupation and the rebuilding of Iraq. It ain't going to happen. But he went before Congress and made that promise anyway. So, you know, the missing oil is also as much a part of the story as the missing weapons of mass destruction. let's not forget. I mean, this was not a surprise that this is busting the bank. This is not a surprise that the American taxpayers are being taken down for billions, and the Iraqis are being bled dry economically. This is completely predicted by the insiders, but you know, the war team insisted on pushing ahead.
Well, if we could move to another aspect that might come up in this coming election, and that is the war on terror. And the Bush administration, as you had previously pointed out, had some significant ties to both the Bin Ladens as well as some interesting arrangements with the Saudis. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, one thing you'll see in my book and Michael Moore's upcoming film is more about the Saudi-Bush administration connection. And you know, let me straighten one thing out right away. I don't have any information that Bush planned the attack or knew about it in advance. And, you know, at BBC, by the way, our view is that anyone who accuses Bush of knowing anything in advance really better have some good documentation. You know, so, you know, that's not what it's about. It is about a prejudice of the current administration, which stopped them from going after the Saudis. In fact, we have FBI agents and CIA agents and DIA agents who came to me at BBC and said we were stopped from investigating, one, the Bin Laden family in the U.S. We had two guys who we knew were fronting a suspected terrorist organization. That word suspected terrorist organization came out of a document that they handed me. And they weren't allowed to go after these guys. They weren't allowed to go after the follow the money on secret meetings that were held between Saudi billionaires and Al-Qaeda operatives. And that was not because Bush wanted America attacked. I don't see that, and I don't believe that. But he certainly didn't want the Saudis to be made uncomfortable, especially those Saudis who had put a lot of money into Bush family enterprises. Which is, you know, I'm not saying that they bought the blindness of our security agencies, but the problem is that when you have a president and a presidential family financially tied up with the Saudis, you've got a problem because these people are funding the guys who are killing us. I do know that Bill Clinton sent two secret delegations in the year 2000 to Saudi Arabia asking the royals to stop paying the guys who were trying to kill us. That's in the year 2000. In 2001, not one delegation came out from George Bush, and the Saudis read that as, hey, the heat's off. And that's a big problem.
If you read a lot of the letters to the editor, people really like to get on that the Clinton administration really didn't do anything about the war on terror any more than the people are accusing the Bush administration of doing.
Well, one of the things is that Bill Clinton, one thing I want to be very clear, I'm nonpartisan here because Bill Clinton, for example, let one of the Al-Qaeda members, the guy who was involved in the attack on the Khobar Towers, he was extradited to the U.S. from Canada, and Clinton let him go, basically let him be extradited back to Saudi Arabia, so he's out of our grasp. But then, when our embassies were attacked, Clinton said, that's it. That's when he rocketed the Bin Laden's camps in Afghanistan. But then Bush came in, and I want to quote you something that should just send chills up your spine. Robert Oakley, who's advising the Bush transition, said, we have no problem, no major problem with Bill Clinton's foreign policy, except for his fixation on getting Osama bin Laden. They saw this as a crazy fixation. They said, well, we don't like bin Laden, but you can't run a foreign policy on trying to get Al-Qaeda. So they gave $43 million to the Taliban for supposedly getting rid of poppy plants, which had a lot to do with greasing discussions for oil pipelines. So, you know, I mean, again, this was not because George Bush likes Osama bin Laden or is some type of buddy of his or has some type of financial relationship. The issue is that we have an oil-poisoned administration. They're oil-contaminated. It's like an oil spill in the White House. I mean, everything is covered with oil. Everything from the invasion of Iraq with the plan to divide up the oil fields to looking the other way to Saudi shenanigans.
So how do you foresee us cleaning up this sticky mess?
I'll tell you, well, a few things. One, tell the truth on them. I think our big problem is not just the question of who's in the White House. It's the big question of what we're told. I mean, you know, what we're given is some draft dodger landing on an aircraft carrier in a jet fighter. We've got PR stunts like that, you know, and that's our concept of news in America. So we're not told what the real story is. You know, obviously, I think if most Americans saw the State Department documents on carving up the assets of Iraq, your average American would just lose their lunch and say, because you'd have to look at that and say, is this why we're there? Is this why our kids are still getting their keister shot off? You know, maybe we didn't go in there for the oil, all right, but I got to tell you, you look at these documents, you know we sure as hell ain't leaving without it. And that's a big problem. So we got to first get the information. Once Americans have the information, they know how to act. I don't tell people how to vote. Keep the guy in, keep the guy out, but you got to have the information.
One of the ways of getting that information would be to come out and hear you speak this coming Monday night in Seattle.
Yep. In fact, there'll be a town hall, 7 p.m., you know, donation to cover some of the costs cheap. But 7 p.m. at a town hall, and we'll also have there the new elections, special expanded elections edition of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. And, you know, like I say, buy a copy, change the cover to, like, you know, put Bill O'Reilly's picture on in case, you know, in case Homeland Security gets you nervous. But do come out or read the book. It's not against the law to read books yet. Or you can also go to the website, www.gregpalast.com, where you can even see the BBC television reports that are just too dangerous to air in America.
Well, looking forward to hearing you speak on this coming Monday.
Great. I hope you'll be there, by the way.
I will.
Great. Okay, thanks a lot.